Some audio clips on this page cover multiple stops. I will give you walking instructions and then say pause. Please pause the audio, make the walk, and restart. Starting in 1725, Brunswick Town became a center of commerce, with tobacco, lumber, naval stores, furs, and other products being shipped out, as well as the home of a number of prominent persons. Among the prominent persons were royal governors Arthur Dobbs and William Tryon, making this the de facto capital of the province of North Carolina from Dobbs's arrival in 1754 until Tryon moved to his new palace in Newbern in 1770. By the American Revolution, there are at least 120 buildings, including 50 or 60 houses here. Many are two stories tall and built out of ballast stones from ships, which had been used to balance out loads. However, the town has been eclipsed by Newbern and Wilmington, so its population is down to merchant workers and only a few families. Look at the Moore lot. Maurice Moore, son of the town's founder, King Maurice, was given this half-acre lot in 1759. In time, he had a house built here in the West Indies style, with a porch across the front where he lived with his wife Anne. He joined the colonial legislature around age 22, and 6 years later he was appointed an appeals court judge in Salisbury. He was suspended briefly after writing against the Stamp Act, discussed later. Moore commanded the cavalry in the colonial army sent to repress Western protesters against Tryon's government for corruption and unfair taxation, called the Regulators. He was a judge in two Hillsborough trials of regulators, sentencing some to hang in 1771 after the Battle of Alamance, but he argued for Tryon to go easy on the rest. As wider rebellion broke out, Moore argued for a slow approach to the differences with the king and parliament, but served in the rebels' third provincial congress. He died in early 1777, though exactly where, when, and how are unknown. An archaeologist wrote, "A burned pine floor in the cellar suggested that this house burned. An unusual smokehouse with an external fire pit and brick tunnel to carry the smoke into the structure was only a few years old when it and the house were burned down." Turn right and take the sidewalk to the end by the fenced area around a series of room foundations. Pause. Goods and people from around the world arrived at the town's four docks, two of which were somewhere just south of here. Sadly, some of those people were enslaved, brought here to be sold. In this lot, archaeologists found a pocket knife with Malaysian writing on it, and china from China was discovered in every house in town. During the Revolution, a former pub, and at some point tailor shop, stands here. You and it are surrounded by a low ballast stone wall running 70 feet left to right and 18 feet wide. Part of the wall, a semicircle on the riverside end, is still visible downhill. Inside are six rooms, each 10 feet wide, with a shared chimney between each pair. Some problems are universal, including drunken sailors. The law the Colonial Assembly passed in 1745 to encourage settlement here said pubs had to stop serving sailors after 6 hours and no later than 9 at night in the summer unless their captain approved, in writing. Go back to the trail intersection and look out at the river. The island, you see, did not exist at the time. Pause. As you stand here on Saturday, April 6, 1776, be ready to duck behind a nearby building. A British foraging party captured a Patriot militia officer and five of his men near town after a brief skirmish. British ships are cruising up and down the river firing cannons at anyone not wearing the red jacket of the British infantry. A British fleet is anchored off the mouth of the Cape Fear near modern Southport with the British Army and the current royal governor on board. In charge of one corps is a man who will become more famous in the state 5 years later, Brigadier General Lord Charles Cornwallis. On Friday, May 17, his force of 900 redcoats approached Brunswick Town, probably along the river from the south to the right. They had been rowed to a landing downriver overnight. You hear shots from sentinels, which are returned by the British, and the Patriots melt into the woods unscathed. The small garrison left here figures out what is happening and escapes town. Moments later, the troops arrive to a huge surprise. The last residents of town are already gone. Part of the force continues to the north just past today's Orton Pond, the last reservoir you passed driving in, hoping to capture an artillery battery there. But it, too, had retired. An historian notes, "All that Lord Cornwallis could obtain for his efforts were 20 bullocks, bulls, and 6 horses." During the April raid, there were no casualties, but 6 Patriots were captured. In the May raid, 1 British soldier was killed. Most modern sources report that the British burned the southern half of town where you are standing. However, evidence uncovered by the manager of the State Historic Site indicates the town was burned sometime after 1776, perhaps by British troops occupying Wilmington in 1781. Please follow the walking instructions under the section titled Dry's Dock and click its audio clip.